Accession number 9422, Reel 9.
Mr. Harold Hayward, Reel 9. You were telling me about how when you moved into the trenches in front of Arras,
yes,
February 1916, the conditions were much better than they had been on the Somme marshes.
I should say they were the very best against the very worst that we had. And you could walk up through the trench, and they were all in perfect order. There'd been no trouble, so they weren't blown in. You didn't have to climb over anything. No repairing or putting trenches or communication trenches in order at night time. They were all just tickety-boo, marvellous.
Were they deeper or better constructed?
Yes, they were both deeper and cleaner, and we had trench boards which you could see and walk along on.
The duck boards, yes.
Yes, both on the way up to the line and also, you know, when you're in the front line or support a reserve.
What about dugouts? Were the dugouts any different or were they the same basic pattern?
Yes, I think that they were somewhat better, yes. I remember thinking that quite different from the cubby holes we shoved ourselves into with the rats down on the Somme. We really could have a good rest up the line when it was our turn for duty off. But there was very little to do because it was the perfect trench, which wasn't necessarily representative throughout the whole of the British line.
Now, did you get rations and such like in the same way as you had there?
Oh yes, they had to be brought up by your opposite number within the brigade.
And they were pretty well the same as they had been on the Somme.
Yes, but of course so much nicer. I mean, the things came up boiling hot tea, not half cold.
What about the actual routine fighting? Was that pretty...
I didn't see any at all. There was none at all on our front, and we moved about within the division. That brigade there, and that brigade there, and that brigade there. But there were three Birmingham battalions, Powell's battalions, brigaded with us when we were in England. And they were, each of those, with ourselves, was put into one of the brigades of the 5th Division. And one of them, and one of these battalions, did do a battalion night raid. Not just a platoon raid, but the battalion went over. They lost a lot of men.
But your own battalion, it was still a very quiet front, as
very, well, it was quiet when we were occupying it. But we didn't sustain a raid on us, and neither did our battalion make a raid. One or two of our officers used to go out on their own with two or three men and lie out to learn, if they could, what was happening.
But you didn't do any of that.
I wasn't called on to do that at all. Our platoon.
And what about the amount of small arms or artillery fire? Was that still minimal?
Yes, but there was more of it. There was more of it than just those three. Right? And by then, they had brought into use the trench mortars, and some of our fellows from our platoon went on to trench mortars. The advantage of doing that, of course, you were a little entity on your own. You weren't part of a platoon, part of a company, part of a battalion. You ran your own little show and took your own, I forgot what the English word was, the Germans opposite was a Minenwerfer.
Did the Germans also have these?
Yes, they did. And it was nasty things. But after you'd been out there for a time, you heard these Minenwerfer coming over, and you sensed whether it was coming towards you or going that way. So you either dive for a dugout, or just you know, didn't take any notice. You got used to what their habits were.
Could you see where the Minnewerfer shell was going, or how did you...
No, it actually, none ever felt in the front line when our company was occupying the front line. But when other of the companies of the battalion were there, some of them did drop in and cause casualties, quite a number.
During this period while you were at Arras, you weren't on, I presume you weren't on the 48-hour system here, where you were only in the front line 48 hours.
Oh no, on the contrary, instead of it being a struggle to get up and down, carrying the rations to the folk, to the battalion in the line, the front line, it was quite a pleasant sharp walk, that's all it was, and then you finished for the rest of the day, the twice you did that.
No, but I mean the time you were, while you were, how long were you actually in the front line for?
Oh, much longer time than we were down on the Somme. We were there in the front line for probably a week, and then another week in support and another week in reserve, and that meant being in the town of Arras itself, and there, because we were in houses, and it was a very nice suburb it happened we were in, and there were pianos in every house, so we had good fun, you know, having a piano to sing and dance to. No civilian people to the east end of the town, but there were civilians to the west and central part of the time. It was a great place for wine storage, and that's where those who remained behind lived, down in the big caves, the wine caves. The one interesting thing about it was in the main central square, they'd got netting up all the way around it to stop German snipers from seeing people pass over this square of, I suppose it must have been about 100 yards across from corner to corner, and it was a criminal offence not to run across. You had to get across as soon as possible. There'd been so many casualties.
So there were more snipers in this area.
Yes, indeed. The Germans had got a good view looking down onto that, and that's what we had to do.
Did you have more trouble with the snipers in the front line as well?
Yes, comparatively, yes. But where the danger was, that we could be sniped when we were in reserve in the town of Arras.
And that was actually more dangerous?
Really, yes. Yes, it was, yes. And there was more artillery, up against artillery.
Now, throughout this period, the battalion had set off in fine spirit, and they hadn't really been in much action yet.
Were you
looking forward to action, or were you pleased at this state of affairs? What sort of was the morale of the battalion like?
Well, we expected it. We knew it would be part of our job to do. The fact that we hadn't actually been called to do it may have caused a little surprise and disappointment, perhaps. We hadn't joined up to spend a life in a half-filled muddy trench.
So the morale was good, fairly
excellent.
Good still, and you were still looking forward to your first taste of real action.
Yes, we were all ready for that. I won't say that we were eager, you know, to go over and become a casualty, but we certainly knew that that's what we were there for, and that's what we joined up for.
Was trench warfare, as you'd seen it so far, was it as you'd expected trench warfare to be?
We never dug a trench in England.
So it was all new?
That was all new. And there were degrees of that newness. The worst down on the Somme, none better than were in front of the Arras, east of Arras.
When did you come to leave the Arras sector?
When the big Somme offensive was due. When we were in the Arras sector, when we were out on divisional rest our brigade, we were in a village well behind of Allenville, and that was like any other village in the middle of France. I mean, occupied by people, and we were just living in the country. And we went back to the same village each time we were out on
brigade rest.
Brigade rest, yes.
So you went up, you were moved around about June, July 1916, just prior to the Somme.
In the early part of during June 1916, what was the name of the great French, famous French, Soissons-Quinze, was it? Was that their famous quick-firing field?
Yes.
Yes, and we had them behind us for a week, you know, before they went down to Verdun. That was rather interesting to pass through their lines, you know, on the way up to the front, and that they were our supporting artillery, French. But
when you moved in late June 1916, you were employed on some diversionary operations, some marches to...
Yes.
Could you explain all about that?
Yes, but there's just one thing about marching. These villages behind ours, where we were out on divisional reserve, were about 10 miles away. And I remember that going out to get to these villages, which we did have to do at night time because of because it was getting light and we didn't want to be exposed. We marched along pretty dog tired, and the fellow on the right, he would drop off into the ditch, so we'd pull him up and put him in the centre of about half a dozen so that he could walk along asleep on the way back to this village of Allenville. But then our first effort towards the big Somme offences was to march down to the Somme at night time and then back in the daytime, fully exposed to the Germans' observation balloons, so to give them the impression that the troops were moving from the south to the north. We got a bit bored with that.
How many times did you do that?
About three or four times. We all thought one thing. We thought we were going down. We knew that the campaign was on. We knew that it had started. We got it, of course, from the Paris Daily Mail, as well as the Matin or some French papers we could buy in Arras.
So each time you marched down towards the Somme, you thought you were going to join in, but then
yes, but when we realised it was only just a bit of blah that give the Germans impression that when we marched down, that was at night time. But in the daytime, when we marched up back to Arras, to give the impression that Haig was withdrawing his troops from the south to provide a big army to make the attack, which was generally known would be coming.
So this was in June. It was before the actual opening of the Somme offensive
First
of July.
That's right, yes.
What did you think of this sort of diversionary tactic? Did you understand it? Were you told about it by your officers?
No, but it dawned on us after two or three times. Blessed nuisance, all for nothing, we thought. We'd not taken the army or the corps attitude towards what we were just there using us for.
Now, eventually you did go down to the Somme. When did that happen?
Yes, well, that was mid-July. The offensive had started, and about the mid-July, we marched. When we were down there, we were down there for action. And we went through Albert, and I thought at the time that the river over which we marched on the bridge into the town of Albert was the Somme. Of course it wasn't, it was a tributary. And the Somme was some distance away. But then we went up into Corps Reserve and into Divisional Reserve, close up to the line, either to withstand a counterattack by the Germans, whose positions some other division had captured, or to go through them and get farther on. But we did several night marches, thinking that we were being moved up to withstand a counterattack, or a likely counterattack. It was there we saw the effect of heavy artillery on woods and forests. All there are just stumps where they'd been all shattered by a high explosive.
Was this your first experience of the power of modern artillery? Or?
Yes, it was, because we hadn't met it at all before, neither on the Somme nor at Arras.
What did you think of it?
Well, it was a... when we were told we were going into, say, Bourlon Wood, or forgot the name of the other woods now, Lousy Wood became to be known, we thought we would be going into a real wood, the same as we had known at, say, at Ashton Park, whereas, of course, it was so many stumps. That's all.
What was the what state was the ground in?
Very good. Very good at the beginning, but it dawned on me after we'd been up and then back, then up again, that every time that we made an attack, the rain came down. Every time the Germans made a counterattack, it dawned on me there was no rain that day. And I remember thinking that when I was at school looking at the Wide World magazine in the library, that the corn planters on the Midwest of America paid a man so much to produce so many eighths of rainfall. And I thought, well, if just one man can earn a good living doing that, what couldn't the might of... Because in those days, Germany was looked upon as the leading country with knowledge of chemistry and anything like that, by far ahead of us.
So you thought they were using some technology to
produce
the rain?
Yes, I did. In fact, when the Second War started, I wrote to the War Office and told them. I said it is possible to find that did happen on this small agricultural stage, and I thought it would be applied on a national basis by the Germans on the Somme, and that we ought to do something about it. I never had a reply from the War House.
When was the first time you actually went into action as opposed to being moved up as reserves on the Somme, or possible to stop a counterattack? When did you first actually go into the line?
Well, the first time we sustained, or we held off a German attack. That was our first real action. Not when we were going over, but when they were trying to come over to recapture their own trenches, which we were then occupied. Some other battalion in the brigade would have captured the trenches, say the Germans' first and second line. Then the German reserve would, that the normal thing would be, they would attempt to recapture them, and we beat off an attack.
So could you tell me about the whole thing of how you moved into the line on that occasion, and where it was, and such like?
Well, of course, we weren't to know where the Germans were likely to counterattack. We knew where we'd attack, and the troops doubtless were moved up into that position, expecting that that would be the place where the Germans would make the counterattack.
No, what I mean is, what can you tell me about that day and your involvement in it? What happened from when you...
We were often enough, it was night time we were moved up there. We couldn't move up in the daytime because the German aeroplanes, scouting planes, would have seen us. A place called Happy Valley was the place which was the approach to the actual fighting. And it was there I saw the what had been woods on a map you know, just trunks, just low trunks of trees standing about so high.
That's
and
six
no,
foot high.
And no branches at all.
So where did you go up to? Was this when you went up to Delville Wood?
That was at Delville Wood, and we didn't go into Delville Wood to attack, to capture it, but other divisions had done so, and our stretcher bearers came up one night because we had heard cries out in the middle of the wood, and we guessed it was some of our wounded. And the message was passed back to our own battalion or company stretcher bearers, and they came up one night and went into the wood, and they three of them found one chap very badly wounded, and they one of them came back and said, look, we want to, would you give a hand carrying this chap out on a stretcher? So I took one of the branches of the stretcher, and those three other fellows, who of course I knew quite well on by name, because they were a company, took the other, and we walked, eventually we got out of this slit trench onto the road, which went in one direction, led into the village of Longueville, and the other one back towards, you know, back towards our divisional and reserve lines. And it was then that we carried this chap back. Did I tell you that when we got back to the field dressing station, there we saw the chap, this wounded fellow, who was been unconscious when we put him on the stretcher, with a fag in his mouth, and we each looked at one another with amazement and considerable annoyance that anybody should have given him a fag, because we had to put him down once or twice to have a rest. It was a sunken road, and we kept into the side of the road, and that should have happened on one of these rests that we carried him back for about, oh, I suppose about 200 to 400 yards to the field dressing station.
He was very badly wounded, though.
He got his inside, we could see his inside, you know, he got a hit in the intestines. But he got his hand into his own pocket and put this cigarette unlit in his mouth.
So you'd moved into the front line. What sort of line were you occupying in front of Delville Wood?
Yes, our platoon was happened to be the right of the battalion line. That's say two companies would be in the line, two companies in support, and B Company, which I was in, was on the extreme right of that sector occupied by the 12th Gloucesters, and between ourselves, number 5 platoon and the remainder of the company on our left, there was this road leading into the village of Longueville, at the beginning of which the Germans we knew had at least 2 heavy machine guns, and just the same as at about when we were down on the Somme, and we worked out that in 25 minutes' time they'll fire off probably a lot of rounds, hoping to get somebody walking along or crossing the road. But of course, messages had to be taken from our isolated platoon to the company headquarters from time to time, and. I did that by taking these messages from the platoon commander to the company commander, who'd been my form master at school, and it was a question of climbing out of the trench up, and then making a wild dive across this rather narrow road and dropping down into the trench the other side before one had been spotted. That added a bit of interest to life, and Captain Beckett, the company commander, said to me, he said, "Oh, Hayward, you've got to report to battalion headquarters." I said, "For what purpose?" he said, well, the normal squad of headquarter unit called the runners, they've all gone sick. They went up in Arras. It was very cushy for them. All the communication was done by telephone. They just sat at battalion headquarters, you know, and had nothing to do. And of course, living and being near the cookhouses had food quite okay, whereas those of us up the line who were actually in the line, firing line, as I say, I've told you, had rations in all sorts of degree of being inedible.
But you think these battalion runners had gone sick? They were malingering, basically.
Oh, wind up! They'd never been opposite the enemy at all. But when they were needed, particularly, theirs was one of the most risky jobs there were, because they had to travel, carry messages by hand over the top between, say, the colonel and the company commanders, and also between the colonel and the colonel's right and left of him, or even perhaps carry them back to brigade, because there was no telephone communication. The artillery, the HE, had blown up the telephone trenches, and on what had been laid down after that on the top, the artillery had gone into action and cut up to pieces.
And this was the job you took over?
And I was one of those who was sent down to take their places. And I said to Mick, I said, well, now, here it is, you know, for nearly 2 years I've been along with these friends in this particular section, and we all reckoned we'd all go over the top together. And I said, I'm disappointed, you know, that I can't be with them. That's what, and he said, well, he said, you must understand that. And he said, 'tis my orders, Hayward. He said, it's the colonel. You've got to go down to the colonel. And when I went down, because I'd done a bit of it sideways between platoon and company, the colonel had me to be his own personal runner to take messages, you know, forward, sideways or backwards.
So, what form would these messages be given to you? Were they verbal?
Yeah, written down. But the attack which we made on Highwood, and they were not supported on their flanks by the other battalions who went over at the same time, you know, in the division. There they were stuck out on their own, and Captain Beckett thought, well, they'll be cut off. Someone had just come round and cut them right off. There had been no flank protection. And he said, I shall have to withdraw them, and I'll have to tell the colonel that after capturing our objective, our company has had to come back to its position because it was isolated.
The other units couldn't make any progress against the...
Didn't get sufficiently far forward to make a line that far into the German positions. And
but you weren't. You didn't go over the top.
No, because because Beckett wouldn't let me go. He said no. He said you've got to be a runner, and you can't go with your platoon over the top, which I didn't feel very good about. But when I got back, he said, I said, well, I said, you